hello, you people. Welcome to the program. I am Pat McNeil, a columnist for the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and website, and one half of your PW Torch livecast top guys. Say hello to my co-host, PW Torch columnist Greg Parks. Greg.
Hello, Pat. Hello, listeners.
Hi. Merry Christmas, Greg.
Merry Christmas to you as well, Pat.
Okay, even though this is a pre-taped show, there is a lot going on. Happy Christmas, you know, Merry Christmas Eve to all of you listening. And if you don't celebrate Christmas, just enjoy the three-day weekend. This is Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Livecast. And this is the 24th of December. And you would think that not a lot would be going on over the holiday weekend. And I don't know, maybe you're right, but there's enough to talk about that I think we can get in a perfectly great show tonight. Greg, I think we pretty much owe it to everybody to start off by talking about Vince McMahon pulling $100 million out of WWE stock and using it to fund Alpha Entertainment, which apparently is being considered for creating a professional football league.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. I can't believe this is happening. I wrote about it in the Torch newsletter. My column in the Torch newsletter this week is about Vince possibly bringing the XFL back, looking at what went right, what went wrong, how they can do things a little differently this time. And we know very little about this. It's a lot of it's speculative. There are some sourced material out there to say that Vince is bringing the XFL back, or at least creating maybe a new football league. But football in some form or fashion seems to have to do with this creation of Alpha Entertainment and Vince McMahon, taking money out of WWE through his stocks.
And I mean, one of the things he did was that they resurrected the XFL trademark, and you know, people figured, okay, well, you know, they're going to sell some XFL merchandise after the 30 to 30 special, some nostalgia stuff, because they do sell nostalgic wrestling merchandise. That's okay. Very understandable. But, a lot of other stuff going on. The phrase United Football, I think it's either the URFL or the UFL have been thrown around. UFL was the name of Mark Cuban's league that didn't make it, but he dropped the trademark, so there's a possibility there that they could be UFL or URFL, YourFL. And most of the speculation has been that this is the McMahon's taking advantage of. This is Vince taking advantage of the NFL's downward swing this year, which was caused by a few things, a lot of injuries, and guys deciding that the national anthem, they want to make political points and not stand for it. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to go out on a limb, Greg, and say one of the rules of the URFL or the XFL 2 or whatever Vince wants to call it is that you will stand for the national anthem. In fact, he might have players march across the field, and we don't know. They might form a human flag.
They may do something even more patriotic than the national anthem. I don't know. That's definitely Vince McMahon's MO is to if he sees an opening, he's going to push back hard.
Yes.
This is a story to watch. The date that was talked about by Brad Shepard, who I think broke the story. Of the XFL returning, the date he gave was January 25th for the possible announcement, which comes, I think, a few days after the anniversary Raw special. That'll be taking place on, I think, the 22nd of January. It's going to be from two locations, so that's going to be a very big episode of Monday Night Raw. So WWE is going to have a lot of momentum at that point. But with Vince creating Alpha Entertainment, we don't know what role WWE is going to play in this new football league. We don't know, what role the television contract negotiations that WWE will be going through or has been going through for next year, what role that's going to play in landing the XFL television deal, because football is very much like professional wrestling in that if you don't have a TV deal or a deal to stream your programming, your company's DOA. So there's still a lot of balls up in the air, still a lot of unanswered questions about this, but I'm excited. I love the XFL. So I know it's not going to be the same, but it's very interesting that this is even a discussion at this point.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, Greg. I mean, there's, I mean, the possibility's been thrown out. Maybe Vince wants to create an Arena Football League, which, you know, he has relationships with most of the major arenas in the country. He could do that. I mean, that's, you know, that seems, and there is a big void in Arena Football. I think since they lost their last TV contract, that, you know, you don't see much about what's going on with the Iowa Barnstormers these days, for example.
I think I just read today that one of the Arena Football Leagues folded, and I think they're down to four teams at this point. So that's a league that is struggling mightily at this point.
Mm-hmm. And maybe they can use some WWE style panache.
Uh-huh.
It'd be good because,
sure,
I mean, you're going to need panache if you can't get any of the major players. But,
there's got to be a balance because I think the original XFL had too much panache and not enough focus on the talent, of which, you know, say what you will about the original XFL, but that was the, as far as talent goes, number two behind the NFL. Now, it was probably a very significant gap between the NFL and the XFL, but there is a spot for a developmental football league. And I think the best thing WWE, or rather Vince McMahon and Alpha Entertainment, can do is to try and partner with the NFL, because I think the NFL wants to have a developmental league. They've had it in the past with NFL Europe, but I think it's just cost prohibitive for that league at this point to fully fund a developmental league. Now, if Vince McMahon comes along and is willing to throw hundreds of millions of dollars at this product, you know, maybe the NFL looks at it and says, okay, we'll have some sort of relationship, some sort of partnership. Maybe we'll put in some money and make it effective and use our marketing arm to help you out. But again, that would kind of go against the Vince McMahon maverick type of, you know, the complete polar opposite of the original XFL. Plus, if he is making it a point to do things the opposite of what the NFL is doing, like you mentioned, standing for the national anthem and things like that, and making that sort of thing an emphasis, you would think that maybe there's not a partnership between those two leagues then.
If you would like something that's a parallel, you know, the AFL, the Arena Football League, is down to four teams. However, Greg, the China Arena Football League has six. And they're supposed to begin play in the spring. I am not making this up.
Is there a Chinese Arena Football League? This is, I assume, a foolish question, but playing in China then?
Yes, that's the idea. Yes.
Oh, wow.
I know. They've tried some games in China, including one where, due to the arena not being ready, they played arena football game outdoors. They've held a draft and everything.
That'll be interesting to follow. I mean, NFL is trying to expand worldwide. You know, they've done the games in Europe, in the UK and everything like that, and they've had exhibition games elsewhere. They've had games in Mexico, things like that. So, I doubt that's going to be all of a sudden a hotbed where NFL teams are going to go to scout. But I think it just shows the broad appeal of football in whatever form it comes to in your country.
Beautiful American style football, which is struggling. Let's get to now, of course, there's the opposing view, the conspiracy view, and really, what is Wrestling Night in America, or a wrestling podcast in general, without a good conspiracy theory? The conspiracy theory, which is popularized by our good friend Conrad Thompson, who, by the way, his Alabama team going down next week to Clemson. But Conrad's theory, which basically you can find bits and pieces of on Twitter, is that it's Vince McMahon taking $100 million out of WWE, and everything else involved is a smokescreen. In other words, when Shane McMahon or Stephanie McMahon or Linda or Kevin Dunn or somebody sells their WWE stock, it causes people to say, wonder what's going on there, and the stock price drops. So, Greg, could this have been a ploy by Vince McMahon to sell a whole lot of WWE stock, and he did sell a whole lot of WWE stock, $100 million worth, but to make it look like he was planning something else so that the market didn't panic?
Well, applying for all these trademarks and things like that, that would be certainly a lot of work to go through, I would think. just in order to create a smokescreen, Alpha Entertainment. You know, that's a lot of work to just create a smokescreen. I mean, the other thought out there is this creation of Alpha Entertainment by Vince McMahon a way to, at some point, sell off WWE to Disney, to what have you, but still have an entertainment arm of his own to continue whatever other business ventures he chooses?
That's also possible. I mean, we don't know, but that sounds very, very possible, in fact. And here's the deal when it comes to television. You know, back in 2001, when Vince McMahon struck this deal with the NFL, I mean, you know, with NBC, NBC did not have a NFL contract. Right now, in 2017, everybody has a contract with the NFL. NBC,
yeah.
CBS, ABC, Fox. They're going to be streaming on. They're going to be streaming on Yahoo starting in January. And there's not that one big media group that doesn't have football that's looking for football.
Right. And you know, part of me thinks Vince wouldn't be going this far and leaving these breadcrumbs as far as recreating the XFL if he didn't have something. If not a TV deal, then something very close to that. Dave Meltzer on Twitter today answered a question about the possible XFL TV deal. And he said basically if they'd had one by now, it would have leaked. You know, if they were trying to keep it under wraps for the 25th or whatever, it wouldn't have been kept secret. It would have dropped. So, you know, you wonder, WWE has a pretty good relationship with ESPN at this point, even though ESPN does have the NFL package, obviously. But if the XFL is a spring league, as it was initially, it certainly wouldn't run into anything dealing with the NFL. I don't know if NFL has any kind of exclusivity with ESPN or with any other networks, but ESPN has shown a willingness to work with WWE and to work with Vince McMahon in basically promoting WWE as news on SportsCenter and things like that. So the other side of that coin is WWE and Vince McMahon are more friendly with more media groups than they were in 2001 as well. So that can open up a few more doors for them, I think.
Well, okay, Greg, that's true. However, you know, the NFL gets kind of jealous about these things. So,
and that's why, you know, that's kind of why I posited the idea of those two working together. I think it would be in both their best interests, and
yes, it
you know,
would
if
be.
They work together, the NFL won't stand in the way.
No, I agree with that. That's something we're going to be keeping an eye on. But it's Vince going from something like 46% ownership of WWE to 41.8% ownership. And I mean, unless he sold them to another family member, I mean, the goal is obviously the McMahons want the majority of the stock. And this was a big deal, and we are definitely going to be keeping track of it. And you know, people do not look back fondly on WWE when the XFL was going on. They felt it was taking a lot of Vince McMahon's attention. Now, in 2017, are people going to be upset if a lot of Vince McMahon's attention on the creative side is drawn towards the football league and maybe some of the maybe Triple H and some of the people under him start taking over? I don't know that they'll be as upset.
I think WWE is better suited for that right now.
Yeah.
The other thing with the XFL in 2001 is you had Vince McMahon toward the end of the regular season in the XFL buying WCW. So I think reverse became true, and all of a sudden this purchase of WCW, the acquisition of this talent and all this stuff, sort of took Vince's attention away from the XFL at the time as well. So and you've got Vince creating this Anthem Alpha Entertainment, which kind of shields WWE Inc. from, you know, if this XFL deal goes south again, or if it doesn't, whatever league it is, if it doesn't work, if there's a huge negative reaction to it, theoretically it shouldn't hurt the WWE stock as it did in 2001, because Vince is running it under a separate umbrella, which is pretty noteworthy, I think, as well.
Okay. On that note, we will return with more of Wrestling Night in America on PW Torch Livecast after this timeout. And now, page two. Greg, what do you love the most about shaving with Harry's? We have been getting the fine Harry's products, giving us a great shave at a fair price for a few weeks now, and that's why over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's over the past couple of years. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys, fed up with buying overpriced razors and blades, they started Harry's to fix shaving. They bought their own factory. Their products are backed by 100% quality guarantee. They offer their blades at half the price of the leading five-blade razor. They sell directly to you over the Internet. It's all available at Harry's.com. So, Greg, what's your favorite part? Is it the razor itself? Is it getting the blades for a good cost? Is it the gel? I mean, what is it?
I tell you, it's the closeness of the shave, because I use an electric razor. And, you know, the electric razor, I shave every day. And there are times where I'll shave in the morning, and then by 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I mean, I could shave again. My beard goes in pretty thick. So when I use Harry's, I do it once a day, and I could probably go 2 or 3 days without shaving. And it's a real time saver. It's such a close shave, and I love it.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I know you're not as old as I am, but that's what Don Johnson used to do when he was making Miami Vice. People asking how he constantly had that 5 o'clock shadow on for all those episodes. He'd take his electric razor and put the little sideburn attachment on it, and he'd shave with that, and it always came out at like the right length to make it look like the 5 o'clock shadow look. But not necessary with Harry's. Is it Harry's? The shave gel I'm impressed with, but it's different. I used to use the electric razor as well, and you know, this is back in a different area. You use you get the electric bzzz, and you're done, and you get out the electric shave, which they don't have commercials for anymore, and you go electric shave, and you slap your face with this alcohol stuff, and you start selling it like Ric Flair selling stuff in the 80s. It's just very painful, but. You don't have to do that.
You know, Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone made that famous.
Yes, that's true. That's another good example. So yeah, the shave gel is high quality, and it also helps a great deal. And if you still have people on your shopping list or people who you need to shop for in the new year, you might want to go to Harry's.com and pick out a nice travel kit or shave kit for them. But really, they're trying to get you to. Get your blades delivered to the house every week. You don't have to go to Walmart. You don't have to go to the drugstore. You don't have to pick it. You don't have to wait while the little – I don't know if they still do this at drugstores where they get the little key out and they open it up so that people don't steal – so people don't shoplift the razor blades and they hand them to you. It comes straight to your door. It's perfect. It comes in a little case. The razor, it's very easy to attach and detach the blades. You'll like it. And if you don't believe me, you can try it now. You can get your free trial set. You go to harrys.com/PWTorch right now. They give you their trial set. It's a $13 value. All you have to do is pay the $3 for shipping in the United States. And you get the razor. You get the 5 precision-engineered blades, the lubricating strip, the trimmer blade, and the rich shave gel, and a nice travel blade cover. And get to check it out for yourself. And Greg and I think that you're going to have the closest, best shave of your life. So try it now. Harry's.com/PWTorch.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at PWTorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at PWTorch.com.
And we're back. More of Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Normally we'd give out the number, but this is a pre-tape show, so yeah, you can call all you want. It's just really not going to make a difference, Greg. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I hope you have something better to do with your time than try to call us. We're not going to answer.
No, we're not. But tell you what, you can drop off questions at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com, and Wade will answer them on the December 26th edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. He'll be happy to do that for you. And also, since we're not taping it on Sunday night, we're just going to assume, Greg, that the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Washington Redskins won this week.
I like it.
I think that's one of us has a meaningless game and the other doesn't. So there you
and
have it.
And for once, Jacksonville has a meaningful game.
Right. Okay, so we talked a little bit about the XFL. Now, tomorrow night, Christmas night, there's really nothing that says Christmas night like a 3-hour and 15-minute wrestling show live from Chicago on the USA Network. And the one thing we know about this show, Greg, the one thing we know is that it's the return of John Cena. It's WWE's Christmas present to all of us. So what role do you think John Cena is going to have to play going into WrestleMania season?
I think John Cena is going to come on Raw and announce that he will be in the Royal Rumble match.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first year in a long time that we're not speculating wildly about the role of John Cena at WrestleMania. Now, last year he was in that mixed tag match, so he was lower on the card last year. But, you know, there was still a chance John Cena versus Undertaker before it was made official with Roman Reigns last year. But, WrestleMania season, we're talking about Roman Reigns. We're talking about Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens on SmackDown. What are they going to do? We're talking about Daniel Bryan. Does he possibly wrestle at WrestleMania? We're talking about Brock Lesnar. We're talking about Braun Strowman. What are these guys going to do? We're talking about Samoa Joe. And we're not talking a lot about John Cena at WrestleMania.
Right.
And it just feels so wrong to not have him be one of the focuses of the conversation about, you know, what's his match, what's his role going to be. And I have given very little thought to it at this point, and that's a stark contrast from years past.
Well, you know what? I think that John Cena is at WrestleMania, but his appearance at WrestleMania is going to be about elevating someone this year. And because I can't really say that he elevated Miz last year with his performance.
No. It was about getting some footage for Total Bellas.
Right. So what if one of the big matches at WrestleMania this year is John Cena versus Braun Strowman? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, Strowman's been the monster. I know he's already beaten Cena in a TV match, but something with a little bit more hype, something where it looks like there's some real stakes for John Cena. I think that might be the way they go.
Yeah, when you were talking about putting guys over, I was thinking Finn Balor at first, and I don't know how that would work, the babyface versus babyface matchup, and, you know, some reports that WWE is sort of cooled on Finn Balor at this point,
yeah.
So that may not be high on the list. And certainly John Cena versus Braun Strowman is a bigger match at this point than John Cena versus Finn Balor, and, you know, you have right now a limited amount of times that you're going to have John Cena available to you if you're WWE, and you want to make those matches count. And certainly putting Braun Strowman in that position, not only would it give Cena something meaningful to do, but it would give Braun Strowman something meaningful to do. He's earned it with his work this past year. If you've got Lesnar versus Reigns penciled in, the only other thing I can think of for Braun Strowman maybe would be against Samoa Joe. We don't really know what Joel's role is going to be, but he's someone who can be built up as not being intimidated or not being scared by Strowman and vice versa, really. And that would be a truly hard-hitting match. But the thing you got to think about with Cena is he's a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
And he appeared in Survivor Series on the SmackDown side. He's going to appear on Raw this coming week. So not only are we looking at the Raw side for a possible opponent for John Cena, but we've also got to open up the SmackDown side as well, because we can't rule out a possibility that he faces someone from the Tuesday Night brand.
Okay, well, here's the reason why I was thinking specifically of Raw. And it don't worry, it ties into our next story, because that's how this works. The other reason I was thinking for Cena sticks with Raw is this happened right after Dean Ambrose suffers a tendon tear and is going to be probably out and missing WrestleMania. And Ambrose has been a glue guy on the Raw side. A lot of this show with Brock Lesnar not being there has been built around Ambrose and Rollins and Cesaro and Sheamus fighting for the tag titles. So I mean, it would so John Cena helps helps cover for that.
Yeah, and that's a great point about Ambrose. That's a big loss for the reason you mentioned. You know, he's a guy who you could throw out there on Raw for 15-minute matches. part of the reunification of the Shield, which has been a very big plot point on Monday Night Raw, and with Seth Rollins taking on Sheamus and Cesaro. So, you know, Ambrose, not a guy who was probably going to be in a top match on WrestleMania, but certainly a guy who would have something undercard to do. So that they would have to make up for that loss. And really, you know, in the lead up to WrestleMania, where the ratings typically increase, I think even though both shows are live and both shows should be viewed as equal at this point, we know that
they're not.
More of an emphasis is put on Raw. True. More of an emphasis is put on Raw. With the 3 hours, you need more and bigger stars to sustain the audience. So it makes more sense for John Cena to be a weekly or semi-weekly presence on Raw for those reasons leading up to WrestleMania rather than having him on SmackDown.
Right. We are probably going to see some different stuff coming up on Raw in the next couple months. Among that is I think we're going to get – I don't know when – there's got to be a couple people we're going to be getting back. The Miz, who's off filming a movie. I'm sure he'll be back at some point. Let's see. Well, we will get Big Cass back at some point. Maybe not before WrestleMania. Jeff Hardy will be back as soon as they can get him back. Torn rotator cuff is not something you want to mess with. Let's see. Big Show. He'll
we just
be around.
Got the Revival back.
Yeah, you got the Revival back already. I think Miz is probably actually the biggest deal out of the people we've talked about, though. Let me help us out a little bit. We don't know a lot about Monday's show. We do have some news about Tuesday, where WWE is doing their Live Raw, a Live Raw event at Madison Square Garden, not televised. The new main event of that show is Roman Reigns versus John Cena for the Intercontinental title. Now, I mean, that's obviously something that you can, you know, that's something you can definitely do this week while Raw is hitting all the big arenas for their holiday tour.
Sure, yeah, and that's a Madison Square Garden main event if I've ever heard one.
Now, the semi-main event is Sheamus and Cesaro defending the tag titles in a steel cage against Seth Rollins and Jason Jordan. Jason Jordan is covering for Dean Ambrose.
Yeah, and that's a big step down in the eyes of many of the fans. And, you know, the Jordan storyline is something that I think WWE knows what they have here, and I think the heel turn is going to be pretty epic. I think the fans more and more are getting on board. I think they're understanding that that's going to occur sooner rather than later. So, you know, maybe they're more forgiving of this rather than if they truly think WWE is trying to push Jason Jordan as a Dean Ambrose level babyface. I think the fans are in on it at this point.
Yeah, I think that's, I think they're getting what's going on. But you know, if you're putting Jordan in this spot and you because you need a baby face to hang with Seth Rollins and Sheamus and Cesaro, you know, you're probably wishing you hadn't spent the past few months tearing him down.
Well, the nice thing about it is he has been wrestling, you know, the 15, 20 minute TV matches. He's been impressing, I think, in those, and he just teamed with Rollins and Ambrose. So from a storyline perspective, it does make sense today, you know.
Okay, also at MSG, Finn Balor versus Samoa Joe, which you know, we certainly know what they can do. Matt Hardy versus Bray Wyatt. They can actually just stand there and cut promos on each other for 10 minutes, and I think that'll probably go over. And, Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Mickie James against Absolution. And that's fine. I mean, I think that's a good lineup for the Garden without really needing too much more.
That's really solid. Really solid lineup there.
Okay, but yeah, the Jason Jordan thing threw me. And here's the problem I think that WWE is going to face here on Raw without Ambrose. They had all their eggs in the basket of Sheamus and Cesaro against Ambrose and Rollins. And Sheamus is working hurt. He has a problem with spinal stenosis, apparently, which that's not good. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. And they have not really developed their tag teams to the point where there's anybody that can jump in. They would have to build up, say, Gallows and Anderson a good deal before putting them back out there as credible challengers against Jameson Cesaro. And you know, the other tag teams you have, well, let's say Rhino and Heath Slater, I don't think that's going to cut it either. Axel and Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas, you know, perhaps not. The Revival, maybe. I don't know.
That's the one thing SmackDown's done better lately than Raw is cultivating the tag team division. And we saw that in the last pay-per-view Clash of Champions with four tag teams in the tag team title match. Now, the match itself didn't really work, but, you know, I think there's a sense that on SmackDown the tag teams are a little more on even footing. There's a little better depth there than on Raw where, you know, as you said, you know, it was Sheamus and Cesaro, and you know, certainly Matt and Jeff Hardy for a time were looking like a pretty good option in the tag team division, but then Jeff Hardy gets hurt. And now Dean Ambrose has gotten hurt, which has taken the Shield of Seth Rollins and Ambrose out of the picture. So really, they got the Revival back at a really good time. And the problem, you know, both Sheamus and Cesaro and the Revival are heels, and neither one of them seems best positioned to be a babyface team at this point. So, you know, something may have to be done, and I don't know if you want to, you know, break glass in case of emergency and bring, say, the New Day over or bring another tag team over from the SmackDown side, however you write that storyline out. But certainly – and then, I mean, you know, the other option is if you have Sheamus and Cesaro drop the tag belts and really give Sheamus some time to heal up. I know you're not going to heal up from taking time off for spinal stenosis, but certainly give him some time to recuperate and recover. That may be the better option than anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's definitely something that that we're going to be thinking about here. I think part of the problem also is, you know, with Raw, they can say, okay, creative has nothing for you. Go work main event or go be on 205 Live. On SmackDown, they are so, you know, things are so tight. If you're ambulatory, they will find something for you to do. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are.
That's on a 2-hour show too, and you would think the problem would be opposite, where they'd, they'd be struggling to find guys to fill up Monday Night Raw, but like you mentioned with the cruiserweights and everything like that, it certainly adds a different dimension to Monday Night Raw that we don't see on SmackDown Live.
No, it certainly doesn't. All right, well, we will continue this discussion after a timeout. This is Wrestling Night in America, exclusively on PWTorchLivecast.com. Don't you go anywhere.
I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
And Wrestling Night in America returns here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Happy Christmas Eve. It's our Christmas Eve edition. I am Torch columnist Pat McNeil, joined by Torch columnist Greg Parks and the number – well, I was going to give the phone number. anyway, next week you can call in.
What a tease,
Pat. next week you can call in, maybe. Greg will be handling next week's duties. I expect to be otherwise occupied. That Greg will do the New Year. It'll be Greg Parks' New Year's Rockin' Eve. So be sure to tune in. I don't know what we're doing next week. Okay, we'll think of something probably after Christmas here. So continuing with our topics, as we were hitting all the hot wrestling news of the week, SmackDown. We did the Clash of Champions show, the post game show. You heard that last week, and we were wondering what the direction would be between Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. And I thought, you know, given the way WWE does business, this is about as good as you could hope for. they managed to prolong this thing without making either of them look too dumb, I guess, would be a way I'd put it.
Yeah, and I think there may have been some fans who tuned in to SmackDown on Tuesday night to see some real fireworks between Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon, and we didn't get that. We got a relatively reserved conversation between two adults in the ring, and that's rarely what we get when there's dissension or disagreement within the confines of the WWE universe. So it was almost refreshing when that segment was over with, and you could say, wow, both men made good points. I can see both of their point of views for why they did what they did on Sunday night, and you know, now we move forward. What direction do we go forward? Because this is WWE, and you know that all hatchets are not buried here. So
right.
This is likely to crop up again in the near future. In what form or fashion, we don't know. That's why we tune into the shows.
Right. Well, I think part of that is, you know, when they're on Raw doing the ads for SmackDown, you don't usually hear tomorrow night on SmackDown Live, Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan after Clash of Champions. They stand there and have a reasonable conversation about their differences. Tune in tomorrow. You know, that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's not really wrestling hype right there, but yeah.
That's not what they call a hook.
No. But I mean, it was surprising and I liked it. So that's good. Plus, Shane McMahon actually went back and watched tape of a match, which you know, usually people don't do between TV shows. I've noticed in wrestling,
they rarely talk to each other in between TV shows. If something happens, say Sunday night, Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon don't discuss it calmly over the phone on Monday, which you would think they would want to do. They wait till Tuesday and do it in the ring live in front of millions of fans.
Right. But yeah, that worked out probably as well as it's going to work out. Also on the show, we had the big rematch from Tribute to the Troops, and a good match. I don't think anybody's arguing with that. Nakamura gets the victory over Sami Zayn. A fun match, but it didn't really set anything up for this week's show though.
No, it's sort of like the Shane McMahon Daniel Bryan conclusion. It's like, okay, this is done for now. You know it's going to eventually go somewhere, but they didn't directly give any hints as to what it might mean. And the main event for SmackDown was, you know, it was sort of a self-contained main event. There wasn't any big hook for next week. There was no finish to the match that made you wonder what was going to go on the following week. So it almost feels like you're expecting a reset as far as the main title feud and perhaps the Zayn Owens deal with Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon, perhaps a reset on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing, which I didn't care for, Dolph Ziggler, you know, comes out, he's the U.S. champion, and he puts the belt down and walks off as if he's leaving. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say Dolph Ziggler's probably not leaving. So basically they don't have any idea what to do with Ziggler, and they're going to keep this the whole Dolph Ziggler ungrateful act going for another month. I'm not getting this.
Well, Aiden English's Twitter handle is Drama King, and it's beginning to look more and more like that title should be reserved for the character of Dolph Ziggler, because he is so dramatic about everything he does on television. You know, it's not good enough that he won the U.S. title at Clash of Champions. Nope, he's making a big scene and leaving the title in the middle of the ring. I talked about this with Torch editor Wade Keller on his Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast that dropped on Wednesday. We talked about SmackDown this week, and he was in the same boat as you. You know, the Ziggler character has basically run its course for him, as I kind of feel it's run its course for you, and certainly. You know, I would be in that same boat. I mean, the entire segment up to the point where he dropped the title and walked out was, to me, you know, more of the same. The fact that he left the title there and wondering how they're going to follow that up, I think, is where I am somewhat intrigued. You know, does he come back next week and act like nothing happened? Does he truly just drop the title and say, look, I was in the match, but I don't want it? And, you know, what do the WWE, how does Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon handle that? handle a wrestler who is just willingly, you know, not due to injury or suspension or anything like that, but willingly given up the title. I think there are a number of different interesting directions they could go with this. Of course, the least interesting is probably the most likely, where he just returns next week as U.S. champion.
Yeah, and just treats it like, and he can treat the title like it's beneath him. I think probably the best example of that was 21 years ago, where Shane Douglas did that with the ECW television title, and, you know, treated it like it was nothing until the point where he lost it and then became obsessed with getting it back, which, again, you hate to say that Shane Douglas did something better than Dolph Ziggler, but yeah, pretty much. so far, but I doubt this was Ziggler's idea, so that's fair. We also have a Women's Royal Rumble. We did not mention that when we talked about Raw, but the first entrant in the Women's Royal Rumble is Naomi, which, I mean, as good a choice as anybody. And they set up more of Charlotte and Naomi feuding with the Riot Squad. So what do you think, who gets to be the opponent for Charlotte, or the opponent for Alexa Bliss, and as a result, which two ladies get left out of the Rumble?
You know, I don't know that necessarily that those titles will be on the line at the Royal Rumble. You know, Charlotte kind of was already talking about on SmackDown the possibility of the winner of the Royal Rumble facing her at WrestleMania. So certainly that could just be her confidence that she would retain at Royal Rumble, but it seems like they're setting their sights beyond a Royal Rumble title match. And they're going to need all hands on deck for that Royal Rumble if they do 30. And of course the number has not been released yet, how many they're going to do. Certainly some people speculating 20, others saying 30. They could do 30. It would take some NXT call-ups and it would take some legends to come back, which the men's Royal Rumble has anyway. So, I think that would be fair to do for the women as well. I think it's kind of funny, Naomi throwing her hat into the ring this past week. I don't know if they're going to make a big production about each woman announcing that they're in the Royal Rumble, but just based on sheer numbers, you would think that everybody on the Raw and SmackDown women's roster would be in the Royal Rumble match, aside from maybe the two champions that would be held out. So,
right. And generally, every year before the Royal Rumble, you know, you kind of have an idea of who the 30 guys are going to be before they're, you know, of most of who's going to be in the match. I mean, you can probably guess at least 20. So, I think 20 is a good natural number, and they'll probably replace a couple of their roster people with legends or NXT call-ups. For example, you know, nothing against Dana Brooke. I don't think she's going to be in this match.
That's tough, though.
Yeah.
You have the first ever Women's Royal Rumble, and you have such small women's rosters, and you exclude a full-time wrestler from it. Look, I can get doing it for the men, because you have just the numbers don't work. You know, you have more than 30, and some are going to be left out. But if you have a 20-woman Rumble, and you have, say, 16 or however many they have on their main roster, and you're telling me some are going to be left out, I think that's going to be a tough pill to swallow.
Okay, then let's say this. The men's Rumble, it's 90 seconds between entrants. Let's say if you're going to do a 30-woman Rumble, there's no way they're going to want to have this match go 45 minutes or 50 minutes. I mean, I know they have 4 hours plus the pregame show for the Rumble, but they're not going to want two matches of that length on the show. So
I think the key here for WWE is if you do make changes from the Men's Royal Rumble, you have to acknowledge that you're going to get blowback from some fans.
Yeah, you are
going to see whatever even minor changes, whether it's the numbers 30 to 20, whether it's the times between entrances, you're going to have people stand up.
That's what I'm saying.
Well,
60 seconds.
Yeah, well, but I'm saying you have to be ready for that. If you're WWE, you have to be ready for fans saying, well, they're not treating the women the same as the men. You know, it's only 60 seconds between entrance. They want to get the match over with. So, you know, any minor tweak is going to get a blowback from some fans, not all of them. So you want to make those minor tweaks, and you want to make them work, and you want to make them meaningful to the match.
Okay, but, I mean, you know, it used to be 2 minutes between entrance for the Rumble on the men's side. They cut it down to 90 to get a better flow going. So, yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, they don't think they have 20 stars on the women's roster. I'm just going to tell you that. So, I mean, anything to – I mean, I think either you're going to get 20 women, 90 seconds, and maybe just have pretty much all the roster on both sides, which can be done, or you're going to do 30 women, 60 seconds each, and, you know, go with a few couple entrants for shock factors and a couple of NXT entrants, and that's how you do it.
And I think that's a fair compromise. I think it's fair that if you do 20 women, you keep it at a minute and a half, and if you do 30,
yeah.
I think you keep it at, you do 60. I think that's fair.
And, I mean, I've had the privilege of blocking out these style of matches on the indies, and it's not easy. You've got to keep track of, you know, you've got to keep close watch on everything, and you've got to be planning it out so that you don't have any 90-second dead spots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough. I mean, that's tough to do. I mean, the men's Royal Rumbles had dead spots.
Sure.
I mean, that's not, you know, the way WWE books, too, it's not like they have 30 guys who are each over enough to carry their own spot in the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, all of that is stuff to keep in mind. Also, the thought that you need the first Rumble to go on as the opening match, I don't think they want to put the women's Rumble on as the opening match. I mean, I think they'd rather put them on as the opening match than put them on as, say, the second match or on the pre-show. But I don't think that. I think they're very sensitive. I think they'll be sensitive to blowback about that either. You know, too, even
True.
Though that might be the best spot for it.
Well, right, and you want to ideally, even though it's a four-hour show, and if you do it in the first match, or even if you do the second match, by the time you get to the men's Royal Rumble, it will seem like an eternity, but. You do want to have that gap, I think, in between those two. If you're going to do two Rumble matches, you don't want them close together by any means. So, you know, do you do it first? Is there really that big of a deal between doing it first and doing it second? You know, is it that big of a difference?
I don't think it's an improvement. I don't think it's that big of an improvement putting it second because, you know, I mean, I mean, generally on a wrestling show, the two places you do not want to be is the second match and the match after intermission. I mean, and there's no match and there's no intermission. So,
yeah, and on a lot of levels, it does make sense to bookend the show with Royal Rumble matches. You know, I think that's fair too.
Yep, I gotta agree with that. Let's see what else we were gonna cover. We might as well discuss this now. The 205 Live Tour, as exciting as Enzo Amore and Kalisto in the main event with Nia Jax as referee was, they decided that Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt will be handling the main events for the 205 Live Tour, you know, just in the hopes that they might get people to, you know, actually show up. Your thoughts on that?
Boy, you watch 205 Live and Enzo Amore is in almost every segment. I wonder what the 205 Live house show tour is going to look like. Are they going to find a way to shoehorn him into three or four segments on a live show? I don't know.
You know what? That's a great idea. You have him come out and be ring announcer for one match, and then you have him do live commentary for another match. And
timekeeper for another match? Sure. You can stretch it.
Of course.
I'm frankly shocked that WWE is doing a 205 Live tour and branding it as such, because the 205 Live brand is so weak at this point. Obviously WWE has found a way to do it in smaller arenas to where they're not going to lose money by having low crowds. They have this roster of cruiserweights who many of them, you know, are kind of idle at this point. If they're not on one of the segments on Raw, or if they're not on 205 Live, they're really not. WWE isn't really getting their money's worth out of a lot of these guys. So, you know, it makes sense from a usage standpoint, but I don't know how many fans that they think they're going to attract. Obviously, putting Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt on the show is an indictment of the drawing power of the cruiserweights, which is understandable because they at this point they don't really have any drawing power. And I think the timing is a little sad, too, because they've lost Austin Aries, they've lost Neville, two of the higher-profile cruiserweights, I guess you can call them, that have come through, and two of the most pushed cruiserweights that WWE has had, and they don't have those two at their disposal right now, because I think that could create some sort of minor spark on a 205 Live house show tour. But, I'm kind of interested to track this and to see how it goes.
Yeah, the story going around about Neville is that he was talking to the office, and they, you know, they weren't interested in bringing him back. But one of Neville's conditions, I'm hearing, for coming back is he doesn't want to be on 205 Live. He wants to be on Raw or SmackDown.
And that would be tough. I think you start
I can
like
understand
that.
Where he's. Let's just say I can understand where he's coming from, though.
Oh, I can understand both sides. I can certainly understand Neville, but I can understand WWE, you know, not wanting to make those concessions, because then you start doing that with Neville, and you're going to have a line of guys who are at Vince McMahon's office door at TV wanting to get off 205 Live because it's such a dead end at this point, and you can't do that.
No, you've got to be the people in charge. Now, do you think there ought to be some sort of a system, Greg, where maybe guys can rotate between, you know, 205 Live and doing Raw or SmackDown?
Well, are you saying still being in the cruiserweight division or away from that kind of?
You know, maybe they do. Maybe you have them say, okay, we'll give you, okay, if you do 9 months in the cruiserweight division on 205 and you're on 205 Live, then you get to spend 90 days being called up to Raw or 90 days being called up to SmackDown.
Would they still be wrestling in the quote-unquote cruiserweight division on Raw or SmackDown?
Well, no. That's the thing.
Okay. So that's a nice offer from WWE standpoint, because then they get used for 6 months on Raw or SmackDown as fodder for Braun Strowman that he can throw them around. And it's like,
well,
you know,
okay,
six of one,
yeah,
half dozen the other at this point. You know, really.
Mm. Well, yeah, but I mean, it might be giving people something that they want.
Well, I think, if you had guys, and I was thinking about this earlier, you know, a couple months ago before Rich Swann got in the legal trouble, you know, Rich Swann and Cedric Alexander worked really well as a tag team on Raw, and you kind of think that, man, they could be a real force in the tag team division, but here they are sort of tethered to the cruiserweight division. So, you know, that would be an example of a success story of what you're talking about, where Cedric Alexander would wrestle on 205 Live, would wrestle within the confines of the cruiserweight division for however long that is. And then after a while, he breaks away and forms a formidable tag team on Raw and is away from the cruiserweight division. But I think those opportunities for the cruiserweight sized guys would be few and far between.
Right. Okay. Well, on that note, we're going to take a timeout. We will be back with more of Wrestling Night in America after this message.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Wrestling Night in America returns here on PWTorchLivecast.com. I am Pat McNeil. He is Greg Parks. And the number is still, well, it's irrelevant because we're not doing a live show, right, Greg?
Perfect transition, Pat.
Yeah, that was smooth. Yes. You see, you'd think we'd go back and edit that out, but we're not going to. So continuing our conversation as we go through Christmas week here on Christmas Eve, we are coming up on a big show. Now, I'm not talking about Raw. I'm not talking about SmackDown. I'm talking about this Wednesday, NXT Television, a huge match, a four-way match to determine who gets to face Andrade Cien Almas in the main event of NXT TakeOver Philadelphia, and it's going to be Aleister Black, it's going to be Johnny Gargano, Killian Dane, and Lars Sullivan. Geez, and this match, from what I've heard, is going to take up most of the hour coming this Wednesday. So let's start with that, Greg. Having not seen the match, what are your expectations?
Well, I think it'll be a really solid match, and there's a lot of unique characters in it and a lot of unique wrestlers with different styles in it as well. Just based on the fact that, you know, Johnny Gargano's story is sort of coming full circle now. He had that sort of losing streak, was distracted by losing his tag team partner to injury. I think now we're on the rise here with Gargano, and I think he kind of pays it off by winning this match. And I think he's a really good opponent for Andrade Cien Almas, the NXT champion, in a couple different ways. First, from an in-ring standpoint, and obviously from a character standpoint, he's very much the opposite of Almas in a lot of different ways. Certainly has earned this opportunity with his work in NXT, and I think it's a really strong title feud.
Yeah, I think this is going to be something. You know, this is going to be something special. We've seen Gargano and Almas wrestle before, and they've had good matches. And I'm expecting that there'll be a lot of Johnny Gargano fans turning out in Philly to see this, and probably some Andrade Cien Almas fans too. You know, you can say that there's not as much star power, but I mean, this is going to be I have a feeling this is going to be a pretty loaded show. And speaking of loaded shows, you know, you thought the USA Network special was impressive. Then you go to NXT this week, and not only do you have a title change with Red Dragon, or the Undisputed Era, or whatever you want to call them, capturing the NXT tag titles, but you also have Pete Dunne against Tyler Bate, the rematch from that they've had a few meetings now, rematch from Chicago, rematch from the UK tournament, and just another incredible main event. And the question is, how long can you leave these two guys off of the main roster? I mean, and just use them occasionally in Evolve, because you know, you can make the case right now that Pete Dunne is the best in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're serious about doing a 205 Live tour, you know, these are guys that would be very valuable additions, I think, over the long term, being on that brand and certainly being on Raw. We saw Pete Dunne on Raw when they were over in the UK, won that match. You know, I think they'd both be really incredible additions to the Cruiserweight division. And the match they had on NXT television was just something so different from a work standpoint than a lot of the other stuff you see on even NXT, which is altogether different a lot of times from what you see on the main roster as well. I don't think it was as good as their Chicago NXT match, which I have probably is certainly in one of the top two or three matches of the year in WWE, and maybe have been my personal favorite WWE-related match of the year. So there was a lot to live up to. I thought it's still a really, really good match worth going out of your way to see on NXT TV this week. The tag title change, I think, was necessary to get the Undisputed Era over further. I was disappointed by the lack of crowd reaction. I know they may have been pretty deep into a taping by this point, which tends to happen on these NXT TV shows. But I was disappointed that there wasn't more crowd heat for Sanity versus Undisputed Era. I thought the match was good. It didn't really stand out to me as anything incredibly special. But certainly looking forward to the Undisputed Era now having some titles around their waist to go with this takeover mentality that they've had in NXT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also on the show, they obviously set up Heavy Machinery against Sabatelli and Riddick Moss. I basically like the way Riddick Moss and Sabatelli have been carrying the heel side of the NXT tag team division against like literally every babyface tag team.
Yeah, it started with the Street Profits, and it started in a similar way with the Street Profits, that feud in Heavy Machinery out. And some people would say this is a pretty flimsy excuse for a feud, but I would say it's a different and a unique way to start a feud rather than WWE so many times they start feuds over nothing, seems like. So, or entrance music with Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode, and I would much rather have a feud start. This felt very organic, and it was much more organic than the way we see feuds start on the main roster and even sometimes in NXT, so I'm all for it.
Yeah, pork and weights, I like it. It's just it's very different, yes. NXT is doing well, even if they don't have the star power. Now, I will direct everybody's attention to the article on WWE.com, and let's point out that while they didn't exactly go out of their way to think outside the box, they did post a list of wrestlers, seven NXT superstars that could go to Raw or SmackDown in 2018, and I think it's I think these names are who you think they are, starting, of course, with Pete Dunne.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, like I said, you could make the case that Dunne and Bates should be on Raw in the Cruiserweight division right now. But certainly he's shined so much in WWE, from the UK tournament through everything he's done in NXT to even his Raw match. You know, when you get guys like that and you throw them on an episode of Raw and don't introduce them to the crowd, which they didn't do. You know, they threw him out there cold, and the moment wasn't too big for him. You know, he really shined. So, you know, I think he would be certainly a valuable addition to Raw.
Okay. The WWE.com writers say, obviously, they need to be there as a team. The iconic duo, Peyton Royce and Billy Kay. And I think that they're actually a better main roster act than they are an NXT act at this point.
Yeah, you could certainly make that argument. They're really, you know, once Asuka left, I think that the iconic duo sort of, I don't know if they lost their purpose or not, but it just hasn't been the same. And I don't think there's really strong enough. There's such a strong heel act. I don't know if there's a lot of strong baby faces right now in NXT. Ember Moon's pretty strong, but she's in the NXT title picture for the women. Kairi Sane, you know, she's sort of finding her footing in NXT right now. And the iconic duo, I think, have sort of targeted her a little bit. So she could work well with them, but it's very much a Lay Cool type of gimmick, which we saw work pretty effectively on the main roster, and these are the kind of characters that the main roster writers have shown that they like to write for.
Okay. Also, for the pages of Duh magazine, Aleister Black going to the main roster. I mean, that's happening at some point, but I wouldn't be surprised if they try to keep Aleister Black, you know, around for until 2019.
Yeah, that's a character that I think I tend to think would struggle a little bit on the main roster. Certainly not from an in-ring standpoint, but from a character standpoint. We've seen characters like that. He's not really a supernatural Bray Wyatt type character, but
no.
He's the type of character that WWE Vince McMahon would look at and say, how can we stretch this character to the bounds of credibility? And unfortunately, I think that would happen with a character like Black.
Okay. Another set of names that come up that really isn't a surprise given what happened this past week. Sanity, you know, Killian Dane, Nikki Cross, Alexander Wolf, Eric Young as a package. I mean, I remember how heavily the Wyatt family was hyped based on their NXT stuff before they came to WWE. I expect Sanity when they're going to get a good amount of hype.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Nikki Cross, they have the ability to affect many parts of the roster with Killian Dane, working in the tag division, with Nikki Cross working in the women's division, with Eric Young working in the singles division. So that would be a really strong group. Dane and Alexander Wolf, obviously, in the tag division. I'm almost surprised that they're not up already, but certainly dropping the tag title to the Undisputed Era. And you kind of get the sense that there really isn't a lot left for them to do in NXT.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd hate for them to stick around for another 6 months just because there's really no openings on the main roster. I think, you know, that's an act that I think will translate well to the roster.
I think they can find room for these guys. Another guy who, you know, will probably have more success on the main roster than he has in NXT. No Way Jose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of a I don't want to say a Ty Dillinger type, but I get the sense from that character that it's an opening house show act, which you need. You know, that's not necessarily an insult. You know, part time tag team wrestler if he, you know, ends up having chemistry with the main roster guy, sort of like Aiden English and Rusev have done lately, maybe an unexpected tag team with somebody short term. So that's a character that is going to be over with the live crowd. They can put him on TV and get a reaction from the crowd. And certainly, like I said, be an opening match house show act. So I could see him being on that list as well.
Okay, another one on the list who I actually don't expect to be called up in the near future is Cassius Ohno. And the reason I say that is not because he's not talented enough. We know that he is. It's because right now he's the NXT gatekeeper. He's got the job that Tyler Breeze used to have, then Ty Dillinger used to have. He's the guy that you have to have the good match with in order to prove that you're credible as a main eventer.
And I think there are some people who see his push since he returned, and it didn't meet expectations.
Right.
I think people looked at him to kind of be in the position that Drew McIntyre ended up in when he came back, being vaulted right to the top and being in title matches and winning the title, and he hasn't even been close to that, honestly. So there are people who see him as an NXT lifer. They see him as a guy, like you said, he's a gatekeeper. And may not get that main roster push. But then again, people said that about Bobby Roode, too, when he was in NXT. So,
right.
You know, Roode, you know, you got to ask yourself, if it wasn't for the glorious theme, would Roode have been called up? Certainly that helped get him over, and that gave the main roster fans something to identify with him. If Cassius Ohno ends up lucking into something like that, certainly there's a possibility that he could get called up, but it's certainly deserved of a main roster spot, but you know, you also need guys like him. We talked about earlier, Dean Ambrose, you mentioned him being the glue on Raw, and I think Cassius Ohno, to a certain extent, it provides a lot of glue in NXT.
And the last set of names, and these are guys that frankly they can't call up soon enough as far as I'm concerned. Akam and Razor, the authors of pain, because we just talked about the dearth of the tag teams on Raw, and, you know, here these guys are.
And they're a team sort of like Sanity to me, where it doesn't feel like there's a lot left for them to accomplish storyline-wise. I think they could be in NXT in order to get more seasoned. They're still very young. They're still very relative to some of the other guys in NXT and on the main roster, still, you know, kind of inexperienced in the ring. So there's that aspect of it. But from a storyline point of view, it kind of feels like they've run their course. I don't know if Paul Ellering would be part of the package being called up. You know, I don't know if a main roster run is in the cards for him, or if he's even interested in that at this stage of his career.
Well, he doesn't go to the NXT house show, so, you know.
Right, but I mean, would you think that they'd have to have someone attached to them, whether it's a woman or another manager to do their speaking for them if they're going to keep this gimmick?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would think so. Yes.
Yeah. So you know, that's a bridge they'd have to cross, certainly, if the team was to get called up. You know, who to use in that role, how to use them, that sort of thing. So
now, I'm going to go with anybody other than Titus O'Neil.
You don't think that they are a fit for the Titus Worldwide brand?
No, I do not.
Okay, really going out on a limb there, I see.
Yeah, I know. I do that sometimes. That's the sort of hard hitting analysis this show is known for.
I love it.
Yep. All right. On that note, we are due for a short message. This is Wrestling Night in America. Pat McNeil, Greg Parks, and it's the Christmas Eve episode here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, PWTorchLivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
You are locked into Wrestling Night in America, special Christmas Eve edition here on pwtorchlivecast.com. I am Pat McNeil. He is Greg Parks. We are your PW Torch Livecast top guys. And let's continue our news and discussion of all the hot stories this week. I don't know if this is a hot story, Greg, but I feel obligated to mention it. You'll recall on the 14th.
Well, if we talk about it, it's going to be a hot story. I'll say that.
Thank you. Okay, so on December 14th, Impact had the big tournament finals match, Rosemary against Laurel Van Ness, in their main event on Impact Wrestling. And then this past Wednesday, the 21st. They did Best of Impact Part 1. Would you believe that Best of Impact Part 1 defeated the first run episode headlined by the Knockouts title match?
That's so strange.
Wait, there's more. Would you believe that it also got more viewers than the Impact Wrestling show from 1 year ago on Pop TV?
Man.
So,
hard to explain, I think.
Well, I mean, okay, here's a possibility. Maybe, you know, if you hear it's Best of Impact, you're like, I haven't seen Impact all year. Let's watch the best stuff. Then, so if you get to watch Alberto El Patron and Bobby Lashley, you get to watch one of the 83 people fighting for the X Division title match, Decay versus LAX in a street fight, and the Sanjay Dutt Loki match. It was pretty much a lot of the best of 2017.
I'm wondering, because this week I think a lot of shows went into sort of hibernation for the holiday season. A lot of reruns, not a lot of first run programming, at least on network television. So I'm wondering if the lack of real competition on television had a hand in increasing Impact's ratings this week. Another telling stat might be next week's rating, because I believe they're doing a part two best of next week. So it'll be interesting to see what the rating is. Does it hold up? I think if it decreases dramatically, kind of what you would expect for a best of show, then we can write off this one as some sort of strange anomaly and you know, move on with our lives. But if next week's rating holds similar or doesn't drop significantly, I think then it's a real legitimate head scratcher. And, we're used to the pop rating fluctuating up and down based on, you know, it's hard to pinpoint a fluctuation based on, a draw. You know, you can't point to Impact and say Bobby Lashley is a draw because they, you know, drew higher rating this week than last week. A lot of it seems to be, there's so few viewers that it's almost coincidental, the up and down. There may not be a correlation between what's being shown on television and whether the rating rises or decreases from the previous week. So Impact is a strange animal in that way as far as looking at ratings. I don't think you can tell as much from the ratings as you can looking at Raw and SmackDown each week.
Okay, well, that's fair. They have, however, been hyping, as much as they hype anything, the return January 4th with the double main event of Eli Drake defending the Impact title against Alberto El Patron. And, yes, the Big Loser Leaves Town match between James Storm and Dan Lambert. Do you think
go ahead.
Do you think that this would – do you think that that's the sort of thing would actually, draw more – would boost the ratings just a little bit from Impact above their norm?
Well, the thing is, who's getting that news about what they're plugging? It's probably people who are already Impact fans. It's probably people who visit the website. You know, this isn't I don't see Impact plugging these matches and getting the attention of anyone else but their own fans. So it could be on the higher end of what they do, especially if they know the outcome of the James Storm match. I mean, I don't think that's any secret at this point.
Career versus career,
Yes. Alberto El Patron, I would expect him to beat Eli Drake here, knowing nothing of spoilers beyond that the match that I just discussed. Eli Drake was a surprise champion. I think he's taken the belt as far as it can go. El Patron would give them a little different dimension. I don't know whether this is a heel versus heel matchup or if we are to presume that Eli is turning babyface at some point or what the deal is there. But look, Eli Drake is champion, just hasn't worked out. It's a little similar to WWE making Jinder Mahal champion as far as taking a guy, although Drake was higher on the card than Mahal was, but certainly in the same vein, an unexpected champion to carry the brand. And I don't think the results of Drake being champion have been positive ratings-wise or creatively. We'll see. I would expect Patron to win. If they really feel comfortable with Alberto El Patron on their roster, and there are drawbacks to that, certainly with his baggage, if they feel comfortable enough to have him on their roster, I don't see them having a problem putting the title on him.
Okay, now here's the fun question, which John Moore pointed out over on ProWrestling.net. That Impact Return show is January 4th. Greg, can you think of another wrestling show that might be happening on January 4th?
I believe there's a rather big wrestling show happening on the other side of the world on January 4th that has been getting quite a bit of hype, one match specifically. So certainly not taking place at the same time, but Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega versus Alberto El Patron versus Eli Drake. It's a real toss up there.
Well, that's true. I mean, plus one of them you got to actually pick it up on New Japan or wait 48 hours and watch the 3-hour version on Access. I guess that could work. Okay. Anyway, speaking of big shows, then you got the 4th. On the 5th, it is expected that we will get Impact Wrestling One Night Only, which remember they were taping matches for that in Ottawa. And yes,
they've got to go back to the One Night Only shows because they're no longer associated with Global Force, which is the old AMP shows is what they had been putting out there. So. One Night Only, certainly a misnomer in some respects because we've had so many of these One Night Only shows.
Well, yeah.
I can't believe this is still happening. Like, I thought that the One Night Only was to cover.
that's a good way to describe it.
I thought that was to cover the pay-per-view contracts that TNA had where they weren't doing monthly shows anymore, but they had to put out some content for the pay-per-view providers. But I feel like that's been like 3 or 4 years. How long do these pay-per-view contracts go where they need to provide this content if they're not doing monthly pay-per-views?
Here's the thing. I expect that Anthem is anxious to keep any contract which might result in them getting paid. So they're not going to change.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that. So on that show, and they did announce some matches at the Ottawa tapings as being for One Night Only. The biggest of those matches, not exactly spoilers here, it would be James Storm versus Alberto El Patron, and yes, Moose versus Ethan Carter III. And really, isn't that worth Friday night pay per view?
Well, if you're the type of person who's listening to us live on Christmas Eve, TWTorchLivecast.com, that's probably a show that you're going to want to buy on a Friday night.
Well, let's be fair. The reason we're not doing this live we're not actually doing this show live on Christmas Eve is our families won't let us.
That's very true.
Yeah. So let's just be clear about how that works. Okay. There we go. So yeah, Impact is back. Impact's One Night Only, and I'm actually interested in seeing what the ratings are for Part Two, and what they put on Part Two is going to be interesting as well.
Are you saying that there may not be enough footage?
There's going to be a Part Two. I mean, they had enough for a Part One, so I'm guessing they planned this out somewhat. All right. Well, on that note, we'll take a short message break. More of Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com after this timeout.
No matter what kind of wrestling fan you are, Ring Rust Radio is the perfect podcast for you. Every Wednesday night, Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest news in professional wrestling, including Raw, SmackDown, and WWE pay-per-view reviews. That isn't all, as Ring Rust Radio also delves into NXT, Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling, and New Japan to discuss the latest happenings in every major company. Ring Rust Radio conducts interviews with the biggest stars in the wrestling business as well, including Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Roman Reigns, AJ Styles, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, and many more. If you're looking for your wrestling fix with an entertaining twist, check out Ring Rust Radio every week on Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. We're coming into the home stretch of our Christmas Eve special, and happy holidays to you and yours, by the way, from me and from Greg Parks. Right, Greg?
Happy holidays indeed.
Yes, happy whatever you're celebrating. Mostly Christmas, though, I'm going to have to say. Okay, so we're looking at... We talked about this briefly amongst ourselves, but Brad Shepard also had a report out about possible inductees to the WWE Hall of Fame, and it's actually seemed credible enough that it's been reported on by other people. So let's take a look at the names he had. Now, one of the things I'll give you the build up, but one of the things that I appreciate that WWE has done, you know, over the past couple of years, and I think I actually suggested it at one point, was the legacy inductions. Where that way they can, you know, they can they didn't have Frank Gotch and Strangler Lewis and Pat O'Connor and Lou Thesz and Rick Adosian in the Hall of Fame, and now they do. They just have the Veterans Committee add them every year. So it avoids a lot of debate, and it allows WWE to focus on the wrestlers who, you know, might actually show up.
Yeah, I don't think Lou Thesz is going to be showing up to an induction anytime soon.
Okay, but you know. Past couple of years, we've had five names, and it's always, you know, four living wrestlers and one who has passed on. So Brad's list has Bill Goldberg, the Dudleys, Ivory, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Kid Rock. Kid Rock is the he's part of the celebrity wing, obviously. So let's talk about the obvious one. Should Bill Goldberg be in? I mean, it's the WWE Hall of Fame. Who cares? So yeah. But, I mean, he'd be going in mostly for stuff that he did that wasn't in WWE.
Right. And he's one of the limited number of real guys they could use to headline these days. That number is dwindling every year because you want to have a headliner and you want to have a draw. And he's that guy this year, if this list is accurate. And really, I think I don't want to say his work, but his the reaction that he got and everything that went into his last run here in WWE, I think cements this choice. Like, I think if he flopped big time and there wasn't really a lot of interest in him, then I don't think you'd be seeing him in this position. But I think his last run here in WWE probably went a long way into getting him into this spot.
Okay. You know what? I actually take that back because, they also induct. Yeah, I think we're going to get six. So there's room for one or two more other than the people that are on this list. The Dudleys. Obviously, you know, a lot of tag teams, a lot of tag teams from the past have gotten in. The Dudleys would, I think, be the first tag team from this era. Edge is in, but Christian's not in. Obviously, that would be, you know, that would be another, you know, tag team from the era that should go in.
The Dudleys, most decorated tag team, as they've been billed as. They've had success, had a lot of success in WWE, had a lot of success elsewhere in ECW. They check a lot of the boxes that you look for in the WWE Hall of Fame, and certainly for what they did in WWE, for what they did elsewhere. I think this is one of the choices you can't really argue with for the WWE Hall of Fame. Certainly for other Hall of Fames, there's an argument to be made maybe against them, but it makes a lot of sense from a WWE standpoint to put them in here. And, you know, with D-Von working behind the scenes, with Bully Ray still on relatively good terms with WWE, you know, that's another key factor to look at when looking at these guys.
Yeah, I mean, Bully Ray, you know, he said goodbye at the last Ring of Honor tapings and was acting like Final Battle was his last match. And I think, you know, I think if he knows he's going to be inducted in the Hall of Fame, he's going to be staying away from, you know, doing non-WWE shows until after he gets inducted. So I wouldn't be surprised. They certainly qualify. They're on the list. Okay, the lady inductee for this year, Ivory. Do you think that's the best use of the women's slot for this year?
Well, that was my question kind of to myself.
Yeah.
You know, I know that I don't know a lot of what she did before WWE. I know she was in GLOW, I believe.
She was. Tina Ferrari, yeah.
And you have to imagine that the success of the GLOW show on Netflix may have something to do with this. It was just within the last month or two, I think, picked for a season two. Wouldn't be surprised to see some attempt at a crossover between that show and Ivory's induction here. For what she did in WWE, I think that's a real stretch. But again, there are factors at play, like I said, outside of WWE that make someone more valuable to the Hall of Fame and to the induction ceremony than necessarily what they did in WWE.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of, you know, I mean, China, but again, they're kind of limited with only having one posthumous induction per year. So that's, you know, that does make it difficult. Let's see. And Sable's never getting in. I don't want to say never, but you know, it's pretty unlikely. Jerry Lawler's ex-wife, probably not. So, yeah, I guess, you know, Ivory makes as much sense as anybody. All right. Okay, Bam Bam Bigelow obviously passed away some time ago. You know, guy who headlined WrestleMania 11 against Lawrence Taylor. Big star in the late 80s. Got to work in both WWF and WCW. I don't know if he's, you know, I don't know if he's the he's the top pick out of the people who are no longer with us. But I mean, the only other person I could think of that maybe they should be in before him is Paul Bearer.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Paul Bearer. Okay, Paul Bearer's in. Never mind. I forgot.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Unfortunately, a long list to choose from with the posthumous inductions. Bam Bam. You know, if I'm looking at someone to fill that spot, I don't know that he'd be on the top 10 of my list. Not that he's a bad pick, but just not someone I guess I would have thought of for that spot. But you know, again, you know, like you said, he was in WCW, had a short run there. Certainly played a big part in the WWF with Lawrence Taylor, as you mentioned. You know, even earlier than that, you know, late 80s in the WWF had a stint there and kind of was an important mid-card guy in the mid-90s as well. So he had some staying power in WWF at different times. You know, it was part of some big matches in ECW as well.
Right, that's true. ECW champion, yeah.
Yep, there's an argument to be made for him as well here.
Okay, and I'm of the opinion that, you know, if you headlined WrestleMania, you probably should get in at some point. I think the one that they're stuck on not doing right now is King Kong Bundy, just because they seem to have a they seem to not like his attitude and vice versa. So I think that's going to happen at some point. Let's see. So those, yeah, Kid Rock. I mean, he's in the celebrity wing. Who cares? Basically, yeah, he worked enough WrestleManias that, you know, that I don't see a problem with putting him in. It's just somebody maybe to draw a few extra fans to the building. Although you wouldn't think that.
Yeah,
would be necessary.
I guess for me, when you're looking at celebrity inductions, I look at a guy who is who's been in WWE multiple times and done multiple things with WWE. So that's like my only criteria, I think, for celebrities that I look at. So unless that one time was really a big deal, really important. So, you know, Kid Rock fits that criteria.
Okay. So let's say we have to come up with another name to fill it out. The question is, I mean, who do you go with? Because, I mean, Goldberg's already set to be the headliner, more or less. You have a hard time at this point coming up with that sixth name, and I'm going to let you. I'm going to let you do it while I fumble around here for a bit. So
you have a headliner, you have a tag team, you have a woman, you have a person who is deceased,
right.
You have a celebrity. You know, that's a lot of times those are the beats you hit in the Hall of Fame. Then you look at the eras. What eras did they come from? Ivory was sort of the Attitude Era. I think Goldberg was a more of a WCW guy. Bam Bam Bigelow was 90s. you know, Dudleys were 90s as well. So, I mean, I guess you look back at the 80s and 70s for someone there that maybe isn't in yet.
Well, if you're looking at that era, the problem is that you're looking for somebody who's, let's put it nicely, still alive. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, a lot of those guys have already been put in. So, you know, off the top of my head, I mean, you look at maybe
Hillbilly Jim.
Hillbilly Jim, maybe a Jacques Rougeau, maybe a Rick Martel. I mean, these are just guys that that I'm thinking of that are still on relatively good terms with WWE. You'd think that would go in from that '80s era.
Yeah, they're just guys you want to tip your hat to at this point. So, those are all names that I could see. Okay, let's see. Final segment. I wanted to go over some of the indie lineups that we're going to be missing this week. The first one, which of course stuck out to me, is coming this Friday. AIW presents their big Rulers of the World show, and no surprise to anybody, headlining is going to be Sid Justice. There's no word as to what Sid's going to do on the show, but he's going to be on the show, Greg.
Oh, Sid. Oh, maybe he's a possible Hall of Famer.
That's true, but I do you really want to do Goldberg and Sid in the same Hall of Fame? I mean, given the intensity of their feud, I mean, you know, there might be bad blood.
I know. There still may be some residual heat there. You want to keep those two.
Yeah,
away
you want to keep those guys as far apart as you can, I guess. Okay. The main event of that show, by the way, is Joey Janela against Jimmy Jacobs. Yeah, obviously so. But, there you go. That's a big one. Let me think of what else we have here. That's the biggest one this week. I was trying to come up with some other stuff. There is another Christmas show. It's tomorrow night. It's going to be Innovate Wrestling in Kingsport, Tennessee. I don't know how innovative this is, but Chase Owens is going to be taking on Devin Driscoll in the main event. So, at least you've heard of Chase Owens. Maybe.
That's true. I have heard of Chase Owens.
All right, so that's a 7:30 bell time. Other stuff that we're getting in the New Year's Eve. Oh yes, update. Nick Aldis Magnus is hitting the road in January. He is going to be at PCW wrestling for my acquaintance Tyler Cates. He's going to be on the show. It doesn't say who he's going to be wrestling. That's
intrigue.
Yes. Definitely some intrigue there, but you know what? I've got a feeling that there are going to be camera crews on there on hand, so to see whatever
NWA
Nick Aldis is going to do. Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. I'm still looking here. Evolve announced Evolve's pay-per-views are January 13th and 14th. First of all, they announced the streaming service because, you know, everybody's got to have one, Greg, as I'm sure you've heard. But January 13th, you've got the double main event of Keith Lee defending the WWN title against Jaka, and Zack Sabre Jr. against Darby Allin. Darby Allin's everywhere. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, he's a guy you see in almost every major independent show, and getting his name out there and pounding the pavement. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, and got a lot of attention by basically being a crash test dummy for 6 months, but you know he's got talent and people are taking notice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. MLW, our friends over there, they're putting together Zero Hour, and I'm sure they'll. I have a funny feeling that MLW might be sending a guest on our show 2 weeks from now, but a big match, a big feud dating back to TNA, Low Key versus MVP.
Okay, yeah, that's, you know, using some names to draw there, and MLWs, I think they've got some positive word of mouth coming out from the previous shows, so taking it to another level here.
And the Lucha Underground special, it'll be Rey Fénix versus Penta L0M.
Should be a really solid match.
Okay, that's coming up on January the 11th, and I guess, you know what? I guess that's it for another solid episode of Wrestling Night in America. I have no idea what we're doing next Saturday, but it'll be definitely something appropriate for New Year's Eve, I think.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. I do. Greg, it's been a great year. I've enjoyed getting to start the show with you. I'm sorry that I won't be, you know, doing this with you too much longer, but I'm certain that it's going to be a great 2018, not only for us, but for all of our listeners, especially our callers like Craig and Boris and, there are just so many, Cody and everybody, you know, and Frank and everybody who can't be with us tonight.
Yeah, certainly appreciate them always taking the time out of their day to give us a buzz and give us some great feedback and allow us to talk to our fans. That's one of the best parts about doing this show.
Absolutely. So thank you for making this a great year for us, and Merry Christmas. And if you want more of what PW Torch has to offer, our friendly announcer is going to tell you all about VIP membership here at pwtorch.com. Good night.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects, and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.
No.